All right. As I said, we'll be in Genesis chapter 34 this evening, so you can go ahead and open up your Bibles there. Chapter 34 is an interesting chapter. It's one of those chapters where you probably wouldn't normally read, but since we teach chapter by chapter and verse by verse through the Bible, it's there, and it's God's inspired word. And so as we read this chapter, the Lord always has something for us because it is His word. Concerning this chapter, we'll see our normal three things. We'll, first of all, overview this chapter. Secondly, we'll outline this chapter together as a class. And then thirdly, we'll study this chapter verse by verse. First, let's overview this chapter together. Genesis chapter 34 begins by telling us that Jacob's daughter, Dinah, went out to meet some Canaanite girls. When she went out, Shechem, who is the prince of this area, saw her and he disgraced her, we're told, by having sex with her. After Shechem had been with Dinah, he became infatuated with her, and he went to his dad and asked if he could arrange a marriage. Shechem's dad, Hamor, agreed to speak with Jacob. Now, prior to Hamor arriving to talk to Jacob, Jacob and his sons got word of what Shechem did. Jacob's sons were furious. Hamor and Shechem met with Jacob and his sons and tried to persuade them for Dinah's hand in marriage. Now, after Hamor and Shechem spoke to Jacob Jacob and his sons brought forth their plan, which they had to get revenge on what Shechem did. They told Shechem that he could marry Dinah on one condition: he, his father, and all the men of Shechem were to be circumcised. Now Hamor and Shechem agreed, so they left and to speak to the men of the city. When Hamor and Shechem came to the men of the city, they told them the benefits of being one with Israel. They said, "Hey, it'll be great. You know, we'll have peace with them. You know, we'll be one." The men of Shechem agreed to be circumcised based on these things. After 3 days, when all the men lay in pain, Simeon and Levi took their swords and attacked the city and killed all the men. They also took their possessions, their animals, their wives, and their children as captives. Now, when Jacob got word of this, he became afraid for his life. Because of this, he rebuked his sons. This chapter ends, interestingly, with Simeon and Levi replying to Jacob's rebuke by saying, "We can't let our sister be treated like a harlot." This chapter is an interesting one. The second thing we'll see is our outline. We see the following breaks in this text. First, in verses 1 through 3, we see Dinah is violated by Shechem. Secondly, in verses 4 through 18, we see Hamor and Shechem play "Let's Make a Deal" with Jacob and his sons. Thirdly, in verses 19 through 24, Hamor and Shechem persuade the men of Shechem to become circumcised. Fourth, in verses 25 through 29, Simeon and Levi attack the city of Shechem. And in verses 30 through 31, Jacob rebukes his sons for their deceitful plan. Now, the third way that we'll study this passage together is verse by verse. Now, our teaching that we'll see from these verses are the signs and dangers of complacency. Now, last week we saw in Genesis 32 and 33 that Jacob was broken by the Lord and his name was changed. From Jacob's encounter with Jesus, he came out a changed man. You see, Jacob drew closer to the Lord. You know, he had a deeper relationship with the Lord that he never had. He sought the Lord in prayer, and the Lord changed his name. We saw an example of this at the end of Genesis chapter 33. When Jacob there came to that place of Shechem, and there he built an altar and called it El Elyon. He worshipped the Lord there as he built the altar. Now, what happened in between Genesis chapters 33 and 34? As we'll see from this chapter, Jacob is not worshipping God. Rather, the name of God isn't even mentioned in this chapter at all. Now, what happened? Well, I believe the reason why we see a change in Jacob is because he settled in Shechem rather than moving forward through the promised land. As a result, he became complacent and he allowed sin to creep into his home. The same will be true for you and I as Christians. If we're not moving forward in our walk with the Lord, well then, we're becoming complacent. And as a result, we're moving backwards. We will allow sin to creep into our homes, we'll allow sin to creep into our lives, and we won't be effective for the Lord. What does complacency look like, and what are the dangers of complacency? Well, we'll see as we study through this passage, we'll see some illustrations. Let's begin By looking at our first point in verses 1 through 3, we'll see that Dinah is violated. Verse 1, "Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had bore to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman." Now, sometime after Jacob moved the family to Shechem, his daughter, who was about 13 to 14 years old, went out to make some friends with the local girls. As Dinah was out with the Canaanite women, Shechem, who was the prince of this area, he saw her. And as I'm told the norm was in this culture, he came to her and he had sex with her, or we're told that he violated her. The word violated can also be translated humbled or abased in Hebrew. Now, Bible teachers say two things concerning this. Some say that Shechem humbled her by either leading her into fornication, which is sex before marriage. But most Bible teachers lean towards the side that Shechem raped her. And I would lean towards the latter. But either one was bad and it was damaging to this young woman of God. Now, verse 3 tells us that after Shechem lay with Dinah, he did not push her away. Rather, he became very emotionally and physically attached to her. He became infatuated with her. Shechem expressed his worldly love to Dinah by sweet-talking her. Now, two applications, quickly. First, complacency is first seen when we let down our guard and start mixing with the world. Now, I'm not saying that it's wrong to spend time with unbelievers in order to witness to them. You know, we have unbelieving family, and a lot of us will be with them around the holidays. And I'm not saying, you're becoming complacent because you're doing that. No, but when our lifestyle, begins to mix with the world in the sense that that's all we do, I can hang out with believers, but rather I'll just go out and start mixing with the world and start acting like the world. That is when we become complacent and sin will eventually creep into our life. Secondly, Bible teachers, as well as Pastor Gene in his parenting series called Training Trellis, instructs parents to supervise their kids. Now, I quote these guys because I'm only a dad of a two-year-old son. And we're told that we should supervise our children. That means we are to know where they are, know who they're with, and know what they're doing. Jacob, just let his daughter run wild among a place that was filled with pagan Canaanites, And he said, hey, go ahead and go out and make some, friends with the girls of the land. And as a result, this happened. So, we need to supervise our kids, know what they're doing at all times. Now, verses 4 to 18, we see Hamor and Shechem, his son, plays a let's make a deal with Jacob and his sons. Verse 4, so Shechem spoke with his father Hamor, saying, get me this young woman as a wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. These parents are now brought into the situation. Hamor, who was either the king or the ruler of this area, was asked by his son Shechem to arrange this marriage. Marriage, more likely at this time, as most of you know in that culture, was by arrangement by the parents. Now, we're not told who told Jacob about Shechem and Dinah, but no doubt when Jacob heard the news, it probably broke his heart, as it would any father. But interesting, Jacob kept his cool. He did this because he didn't want to make a scene in front of the other folks in the land. But also, I believe he wanted to have a council with his sons. So he wanted to get his sons together and tell them what was going on. Verse 6, then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak to him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by laying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. Hamor left to speak with Jacob. Now, sometime before Hamor got there, Jacob's sons got word that Shechem did this to their sister, and they were hurt, and they were very, very furious. Notice it says a disgraceful thing in Israel. The sons of Jacob looked at what Shechem did as not only an evil act against their little sister, but they also looked at this as a slap in the face to the nation of Israel. This was a cause for war. This was basically, stuff to fight over, and so they were serious about this. Verse 8, but Hamor spoke with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife and make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. So you shall dwell with us and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it and acquire possessions for yourselves in it. Hamar met with him, and Jacob and his sons tried to negotiate a marriage for his son. Hamar, being a ruler of this area, tried to first of all use his power to get this marriage accomplished. In verse 10, we're told that he said, "Hey, listen, it'll be great if our nations get together. You know, he said, we'll be one. And this land that I have, it will be your land. And you'll be able to go out and you'll be able to, you know, have all the land that you want in this area. It'll be a great thing for you and your family to make a lot of money." Now, Hamar didn't know that the land was already theirs. You know, he was actually on their land. God had given, you know, that land already to Jacob and to Israel, as we'll see in Genesis chapter 35. Verse 11, "And Shechem said to her father and to her brothers, 'Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me so much dowry and gift, and I will give according to what you say to me. But give me the young woman as a wife.'" After Hamar made his case, Shechem then made his case to Jacob and his sons. Shechem began by asking for favor or grace to let him marry Dinah. After this, Shechem went on to try to win Dinah's hand by his money. He asked her, he says, "Listen, you know, give me or tell me whatever you want and I'll give it to you. I have lots of money. Name the price or name the gift and I'll give it." So basically, yes, he is trying to buy Dinah's hand in marriage. It's a sad thing. Now, interesting to me that Hamar nor Shechem apologized for what happened to Dinah and the nation. They didn't say, "Hey, you know what?" Hamar didn't say, "You know what, Shechem, he got, you know, he was, I don't know what he was thinking. You know, he went out and he did that thing." They didn't think anything of it. They said, "Hey, listen, you know, this is our land. You know, this is what happens in our land. We have lots of money. You can have all this land if you want. You know, so, hey, why don't you just let the kids get married?" Now, another sign of complacency is Jacob did not tell Hamar and Shechem to get out of his house. You know, I mean, say, "Hey, listen, you guys need to get out of his house right now." No, but rather Jacob continued to talk with them and to dialogue with them and to plan with them. We become complacent when we forget, first of all, the mission that God has given us on this earth. You know, Jacob didn't say, "Listen, guys, you guys get out of here because we're Israel and you're pagan Canaanites. You know, the reason God has us on this earth is to bring forth the Messiah, to have a pure line in order for the Messiah to come." Right? And that's, you know, and that was Israel's position. That was God's plan for the nation of Israel. But Jacob, they didn't say that off the bat. You know, I mean, from the text, it seems like if you know, Levi and Simeon didn't go and kill all the people of the land, more than likely this marriage would have continued on, because it says that Dinah was in his house. And so apparently Jacob must have forgot the mission that God had for them and his people, that they were to be a separate nation, a holy nation, one, you know, that was to represent God. And when we forget our mission on this earth, we become complacent. You know, our mission on this earth is not politics. Our mission on this earth, is not different things. Our mission on the earth is to share the gospel. And when we forget that, you know, we become complacent. And we, you know, things can eventually creep into our life. And so we need to remember, hey, listen, our number one goal on this earth is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. People are dying and they're going to spend a Christless eternity in hell. And we have the message, we have the good news that we can share with them. We can, you know, we have that, as Gino, you know, brought out on that video, we're the lifeguards. And we can, you know, reach in, we can save people's lives forever. You know, and we must not let this message that we have, you know, go unpreached. We must preach it. And we must remember that the way we preach it is through our words, but it's also through our walk. And we must be a separate nation. Another sign of complacency, as we see in this verses, is by just not dealing with sin when it's right before us. You know, this is a great example of this is our great friend Samson in the book of Judges. You know, Samson. You know, it's an interesting story. Samson was a great man of God. He was a man who was, you know, who had strength and power unlike any other person we see in the Bible. You know, Samson really, if you read his life, could have been one of the greatest, I mean, was, or, you know, or could have been the greatest, you know, deliverer of the nation of Israel. He had the specific mission of delivering the Jews from the Philistines. It was a great mission. But he got involved with, you know, Delilah, as we know. And eventually, through, you know, lulling him to sleep, he eventually had his hair cut off, which was not where his strength came from, but it was in his dedication to God. But as a result of that, he lost his strength and he became really a puppet in their hands, where they poked out his eyes and had him grind at the mill. It's a sad story when you read it, but it's a story of complacency. You know, he allowed Delilah to lull him to sleep. She said, "Hey, where does your strength come from?" "Well, if you braid my hair, you know, then my strength will depart from me." So he allows, you know, her to braid his hair. You know, "Well, if you wrap me up in these ropes, then my strength will depart from me." So, you know, she wraps him up in ropes. And so he was just always toying with it. Rather than saying, "Listen, woman, you're a Philistine. I'm a Jew. I'm supposed to kill your people. You know, we can't do this. We need to cut this off right now." And so, you know, and so because he was complacent and allowed these things to go on, he ended up falling. And so we as believers, we need to cut it off, you know, and we need to get the word out. Verse 13, "But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. After Hamor and Shechem made their case, Jacob's sons took the floor." Bible teachers now are in disagreement on whether Jacob was present during this negotiation. Some say, "Hey, listen, because Jacob really didn't know what his sons were doing, you know, after, you know, when they killed them." Some say, "Well, he left the room and allowed them to kind of take charge and take authority." I don't believe that. I mean, we're not told anywhere in the text that Jacob left the room. Jacob was there, but he allowed his sons to take charge and allowed his sons to make these plans. And as we see here, it was a deceitful motive that they had. It wasn't a good plan, but it was a plan to get back and to cause revenge. You know, and once again, Jacob's allowing his sons to usurp his authority and his role. And when we become complacent, you know, we allow, you know, things to go on in our homes that we shouldn't allow, and we're not taking a stand that we should. Verse 14, "And they said to them, 'We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. But on this condition, we will consent to you. If you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, and then we will give our daughters to you, and we'll take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone.' Jacob's sons told them that it would be a shameful thing for them to give their sister to a person who was uncircumcised." Now, this is interesting. Yes, yeah, it would have been unshameful then, but the whole thing was, if the person was saved, that's why people became circumcised. People received circumcision as Abraham did when they first believed in the God of the Bible. And so, yes, it would have been shameful for them to give their daughter or their sister to an unbeliever, but they didn't say that, to an uncircumcised person. So, you know, they have a deceitful motive here. They said, "Listen, if you and all the males of your nation become circumcised, and then we will give Dinah to you, into your hand, and we will all become one, and everything will be great. Now, if you men do not, and the nation, and your whole nation doesn't become circumcised, well, then we'll take Dinah and we'll be gone." Now, why did Jacob's sons call Dinah their daughter? It was probably because they were speaking for the nation here. You know, they were taking Jacob's authority. Jacob was just kind of, as he normally did, he was just kind of sitting in the back, you know, allowing his sons to take charge and do this deceitful thing, rather than taking charge in his home and saying, "No, listen, this is what needs to be done, you know, and this is what we're going to do about it." And so once again, it's another exhortation for the fathers, you know, to lead in the homes, you know, to step up and to take charge. Verse 18, "And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son." The proposition seemed good to Hamor and his son, Shechem, but that was only two men. What would the other men of the nation say? Well, we see what happens in verses 19 to 24. Hamor and Shechem persuade the men of Shechem to become circumcised. So the young men did not delay to do the thing, because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city and spoke with the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Hamar and Shechem came and told the good news and the bad news to the men of the city. They began with the good news. They told them that these men were at peace and they could be one nation. After they gave them the good news, well, then they broke the bad news. They told them, well, by the way, in order for us to be one nation, you guys have to be circumcised. That is the one condition. Now, I would have loved to see these men's faces and these guys' faces after they broke the bad news. They're like, oh, okay. You know, I believe this is why Hamar followed up with the following thing. Verse 23, will not their livestock and their property and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them and they will dwell with us. And all who are out of this gate are out of the gate of his city, heeded Hamar and Shechem his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. Hamar told them if they became circumcised, they would become rich. Everything that they had, Israel had, would be theirs. Now when the men heard this, they gladly agreed and they were circumcised. And so no doubt the men were like, oh, I don't know about this. But then he said, listen, guys, we're going to be rich. Do you know how much possessions they have? It's all going to be ours, you know? So they're like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, because of that, we can do this thing. So they went off and they did it. Now, verse 25 through 29, Simeon and Levi attacked the city of Shechem. Now it came to pass on the third day when they were in pain and that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took a sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. And they killed Hamar and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, and their donkeys, what was in the city and what was in the field, and all their wealth, all their little ones, and their wives they took captive. And they plundered even all that was in the houses. Now while the men were healing and thinking about their new wealth, Jacob's second oldest son and third oldest son, Simeon and Levi, came and attacked the city and killed Hamar, Shechem, and all the men of the city. They went through on a rampage and slaughtered all of the men of the city out of revenge, out of anger, as a result of what these men, or out of what Shechem did to Dinah. Now these two men then ransacked the city. They took Dinah from Shechem's house, first of all. Then they took all the possessions, the animals. They even took the wives and the children as captives. Now, God did not command them to do this thing. You know, this was an evil thing. Yes, it was wrong for Shechem to defile Dinah, but it was also wrong for them to deceive them and then murder them. And so, you know, once again, we see the results of complacency. You know, they were trying to accomplish something, but they did it out of a false and evil motive. And so, it's a sad story. Verses 31 through 33. Or 30 through 31. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, and my household and I. But they said, should he treat our sister like a harlot? So when Jacob heard and saw what his two sons had done, the first thing he came out of his mouth was, listen, these guys are going to find out and they're going to come and they're going to kill me. You know, some of your older translations for the word obnoxious means stink. And Jacob said, listen, you guys caused me to stink in the, you know, around these people and they're going to come kill me. Interesting. All Jacob was concerned about here was himself. Again, he was only focusing on himself. You know, he didn't say anything about, listen, you know, these guys hurt my daughter, you know, but I'm sad, you know, that they did this. No, but Jacob's sons, they replied, you know, bitterly, well, should we let them treat our sister like a harlot? You know, should we let them do this to our sister? Sanctification. God is working in our life daily, day by day by day. Jacob was a saved man, and he was in the process of sanctification. He was saved, yes, as we all know, and he was sanctified. He was broken by the Lord there at Peniel. But the Lord wasn't done with him yet. The Lord wasn't done with him. Chapter 35, if you want to go over verse 1, we'll see what happens after this. God tells Jacob, says, listen, Jacob, get your kids out of that place and go back to Bethel, where I met with you at first. And so as we'll see next week, God called him out of this place. Jacob was at a high point in his walk. He was broken. He was worshiping. But now he became complacent. And then God in chapter 35, verse 1 says, listen, Jacob, you need to get back out of there and go back and worship me again. Wow, we condemn Jacob. We say, Jacob, what a dummy, you know? And we can't use the S word as we learned this morning, you know? But it is, you know, Jacob, what are you doing? But you know what? It's so much like us, isn't it? So much like us. Oh, we're at a high point in our walk with the Lord. Wow, we're broken by the Lord. We finally come to the conclusion like, you know what, Lord? I can't do this on my own. And the Lord's like, yes, good, finally. You know? And then we walk with the Lord. We're worshiping the Lord. But then what happens? That becomes kind of mundane. We're like, okay, yeah, I'm having my devotions now. And I'm not really getting anything out of it. You know? And so, you know, we become complacent in a sense, stagnant. And things start to creep into our life again. And then the Lord has to speak to us again and say, listen, you know, you need to get, you know, out of this place and walk with me. And so we're like, okay, Lord. You know, and this is, you know, this is us. This is a human, you know. And obedient to the Lord, daily sanctified, you know, wrestling with the flesh and the spirit. But, you know, we have the Holy Spirit living in us. And so we have power over the flesh, you know. The enemy doesn't have control over us. Satan doesn't have control over us. The flesh doesn't have control of us. But we can daily reckon the old man dead and return to our first love. That's what Jesus told the church of Ephesus. They became complacent. They became stagnant. You know, they had doctrine. You know, they were the best theologians around. They had apologetics. They were rebuking the deeds of the Nicolaitans. You know, they were serving. They were doing great things. But yet, they had left their first love. They had no passion for the Lord anymore. And the Lord had to call them back. You know, and says, listen, return to me. If not, I'm going to remove your church. Your church is going to lose its witness because, you know, you're going to become complacent. As a result, you know, it's going to die out. And so, you know, we need to heed that warning and this exhortation, not to become complacent, but to move forward with the Lord. You know, break free from those idols and those things that are in our life and move forward with the Lord. Also, secondly, something we can see from this passage as a whole is God uses imperfect people. You know, Jacob was the father of the nation of Israel. You know, he would be, you know, the father of Judah. And as we'll see in chapter 38, Judah didn't have a very good testimony as well. You know, and David, he was the father of David. Well, David didn't have a very good testimony as well. Oh, man. You know, and to read Jesus' genealogy, a lot of those guys didn't have good testimonies as well. But yet they all loved the Lord and they pressed forward. You know, and so you're not perfect. Well, you know what? Nobody's perfect. But that doesn't give us an excuse to sin. We shouldn't sin that grace may abound, but we should move forward in our walk with the Lord, recognizing that God daily is sanctifying us, changing us, and preparing us for the great work that He has before us.